At this time, I want to thank the sponsors of today's show: The Witch of Wandering Dreams, Billy, a witch of the Lower Green Swamp, Josie the Mountain Troll, and of course, Pamela. Thank you so much. We couldn't do this show without you. You're listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light.
And I'm Austin Bane X Bramble on Instagram. Marshall, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm doing great. I'm doing grand. How about you?
Oh, wow. you know, she's Benefico.
Just Benefico, yes. Doth thou protest too much, maybe, possibly. It's been a weird couple weeks.
She says sweating.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light.
You did look a little nervous when you said that.
I have been told that my facial expressions make it clear whatever I want to be clear.
Same, and I don't really have a poker face, so...
I know, right? I don't even know how to play poker.
Me neither. Nobody taught me that one. I barely even know how to play Go Fish.
I can do Go Fish.
I'm not a very good
Played it recently in a hospital waiting room.
Oh, that's fabulous.
That's a story for another time, I guess.
For another time, yeah. I'm never good at card games for somebody who reads them. Never very good at card games. I read tarot, not playing cards. What are we talking about today?
Oh my, oh my, oh my. Okay, so we are talking about the topic of...
The discourse.
I know, the discourse. Drum roll, please. Witch blood.
Gasp. I feel like we... This kind of like goes into the... Because I know we've done an episode on gatekeeping.
Yeah.
I feel like this kind of goes into... that to some
it's a
degree.
Cousin. I think a portion of it could be considered a cousin.
Yeah, and I think too it sparks controversy for some reason.
But you know, if it's a very touchy... I have found that people literally have a reaction to the words alone. It's a touchy subject. I feel like I know part of why. I just think that I don't think that part of why really fully flushes out across the board in a rational way. That's just my opinion, and we'll talk about it.
No, for sure. Well, I mean, we can get into it. I don't understand why it draws up such a controversy. So for those of you who don't know, the conception of witch blood is a developed concept from other ideas of like Nephilim theory in one instance, or even just like the passing of lineage or hereditary magic or fated like witchcraft inheritance of some sort. Mm-hmm. And
not to mention initiatory transformation, not to mention like there's a lot of metaphor that goes into this that I think gets mistook for some sort of... this is the definition of it, this is how it's bad, and anyone else who uses it, you have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm like, I feel like there are some bigger fingers and bigger pies here.
I don't understand why it always draws up such a controversy.
There are more controversial things.
Right now, Kim, like, people are actually dying.
yeah, Kim.
Kim, people are dying. And also, too, I feel like that the people who are like, oh, it's being overtaken by eugenicists and things like that, I'm like, where? I've never encountered that. I've looked in, like, I've searched witch blood Reddit threads, never have seen it. I've searched countless instances of, like, online spaces, hashtag witch blood. I've never seen anybody take it to, like, some blood and soil, blood quantum kind of place. So we'll get into all of these things.
Yeah.
Especially, like, the word blood and why it can carry some weight.
Why don't we start with that one? Because I feel like that might be the most obvious thing to start with. Why this is a touchy subject, and then get into, like, actually some more different histories and definitions and a little bit more diversity surrounding it. What do you think about that?
Sure.
Blood does carry a weight for some people, that word. I mean, like, literally, when you say the word blood magic to people who are new to the craft in the first place, the immediacy of thinking that it's like, oh, that's something dark. Oh no, we don't do that. I even remember on the Lovely Witch Talk, which is always true. I even remember someone doing a book review and saying, I don't recommend this book. They use blood magic. And I'm just like, and actually, I really like this person. So it was weird when I saw this, just because I was just like, wait, that's just actually a book of historical magic. Like, that's not even a new book. It's a reprint of an old book from, like, I want to say several centuries ago, or at least a century ago. I don't know. It was just one of those things where I'm like, well, you know, these things exist, and I think we can speak beyond a place of fear. And I'm getting off topic, but I wanted to start with this place of zeitgeist around the word blood, because you also mentioned another one that it also goes to. It goes to the idea of blood quantum, lineage. How much of your actual blood connects to whatever you are connecting it to. And that can have some really, really, depending on how that's being used and taken, I feel like that's where it gets into, like, those claims of legitimacy versus not legitimacy, into a weird place of elitism. What do you think about that?
I have a lot of thoughts on the subject, probably some of which would be better suited for a smaller audience of certain people. But not for everyone, I should say. But I find that a lot of the times that the theories surrounding blood quantum, ancestry, and so on and so forth, like that's all good and great, and ancestry can be really beautiful and is very much so a part of like what we do. And this is a much bigger topic on colonialism, untangling ethnicity, and then the development of the theory of race, which comes out of Darwinism and
Lots of isms.
Yes, lots of isms. Darwinism and survival of the fittest, which isn't even a biological thing. Darwin, sorry to all the Darwin heads out there, like he really was actually on some fuck shit. Imagine that, a colonialist white scientist biologist in the 1800s. Anyways, so this idea of all these things coming into play, I think a lot of the times reinforces probably a lot more than we realize, blood quantum, things like ancestry.com. Not saying that like you can't go get your ancestry done, that's not what I'm saying, but like a lot of those things reinforce blood quantum. So then suddenly it's like, oh, I am Lithuanian, I am all of these things, and it's like, okay, you may have ancestry there, but you are culturally not, if you unless you are, right? And even then it goes into we forget about globalism, we forget about migration, immigration, emigration, all of these things where people move all over the place, and humans are just deeply complicated people, and we're all complicated, and culture is very important, and nuance is very important in all of these conversations, right? So that being said, I think to get back on topic, blood quantification is a pathway for a narrative of some sort of supremacy. It is very modern. It is very colonialist in its or Eurocentric, I should say, especially because we can't even talk about how family and ancestry is nuanced in different cultures and different religions, right?
Especially
Ancestry.
whether it's like community versus individualized.
Right. And two, the idea of what we say as family within, going back into what you just said about community, like the idea of a family is a very loose term in a lot of indigenous cultures, i.e., it doesn't necessarily mean the people that you are born with. And even it wouldn't even be like, oh, this is my chosen family. No, it's like they're just your family. You just, and that's why you have a lot of terms used by certain peoples in the United States, like they'll call everybody an auntie or an uncle or a cousin, even if they don't have like necessarily a direct blood connection to them, it's because there is still familiarity there. All of that being said, Blood Quantum, in my opinion, is not even in my opinion, it is a very Eurocentric tool for the measurement of somebody's connection to a place that you may or may not even have. So it's very complicated, it's nuanced, and we can move on from that. But I think the reason why witch blood freaks people out is because of the terminology blood. And so there is this idea that there is some sort of genetic code that is passed down. I think that's the reaction to it, but I feel like anybody who is utilizing the term witch blood never has said that, never is saying that. No one's ever utilizing that as a thought process or a jumping off point. Do you have anything to add to that?
Sure. Well, and I feel like that actually opens up what I was about to, what the next point is specifically like this term means different things to different people. When people are using it, I've seen a lot of ways in which, especially recently, like people talking about like the, oh, not this discourse again. Oh, no, not bringing up this again. Or logging off till this is no longer being discussed. And I'm
Which,
like,
like, understandable. I get that.
sure. But the thing is like it's in a place where I'm like, are we in a place where we're literally not even allowing people to use certain words because you've decided that your definition of it supersedes the entire rest of the world's? I don't know. I feel like I don't like being
Well,
told to shut the fuck up or don't talk about something. I feel like subjects, especially when there's misunderstandings about them, need to have a space to talk about them, especially if we can figure out each other's perceptions a lot more. You may walk away with more information and ready to condemn them even more. Hey, you just got your idea confirmed. You may walk away with different information and say, I had never considered it from that perspective before. I just don't like down the shutting down of conversation.
for sure, for sure. No, I agree. And but I also like, I don't know, I see a lot more of the shutting down the conversation than I do anybody else actually utilizing it in some sort of,
It's reactionary. They see that word written and they react.
and I think it goes into ideas of like, again, the word blood then being associated with blood and soil concepts and things like that. And again, this is not how it ever has worked in any place for a very long time. The idea of the genetic code and ethnicity or race, which is a construct, ethnicity precedented race for a very long time. But anyways, all of these things are fairly contemporary concepts and or modern concepts and frustrating, deeply frustrating. And then, you can utilize these things to claim sort of some sort of ancestral homeland to in the name of some sort of f potentially false identity, eradicate a group of people. But that being said, that's why these things are dangerous. Anyways, let's talk about what we mean by witch blood, right? What are some of the concepts? So for me, before I ask you that, I wanted to give the idea or definitions, at least for me, before we get into some iterations, like what witch blood is. And so in the way that I've conceived like some predilection to witchcraft, it is within the way that I perceive it and the way that I've been told by certain spirits of mine that witchcraft is an inherited gift that is predisposition, like before birth, predispositioned. You are fated to have this instinction. And there is a myriad of reasons why. And we can get into those reasons at a later time. And that's going to be, family ties and pacts and things like that, right? But it all comes down to this idea of embodying the monstrous or embodying the other that is not human and is exchanged for the human soul into the witch body, right? So this is why we have things like the Devil's Dozen and where you make a pact with the devil and or Erin Oberon's Southern Cunning, where like you are exchanging a part of yourself for something else, right? Yeah, and that is what makes the witch, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there is some again, no genetic code or anything like that to make these things up. Now, it certainly can be from like ancestral ties, but
can.
that doesn't necessarily mean that like my mother was a your mother was a natural witch.
Yeah.
Right, and so therefore I am gifted with these wonderful talents, but I do think that there is a notion, a predisposition that one must become witch, or else.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, like, I can see how from what you just said, like, that's your praxis, like that is how you commune with, that is your own individual experience, and that makes total sense to me. It has nothing to do with blood quantum or DNA ties or blood and soil. All it has to do with is the fact that, in fact, we actually have a whole section in some of these many theories where we talk about the idea of packs themselves affecting you in a way that changes like your own blood, your own spit, your own fingernails, your own actions, your own words. I'm very big in the belief that like there are certain steps you take when kind of achieving specific experiences. In my craft, there's actually a very specific spell, and there's a story that I have written where I get people will see this in the Red Mother, and the top it says, "Do not read till you're ready." And I won't get too deep into it, but the thing is you are supposed to go through a type of enlightenment or experience before you can work this type of magic, because to work it without understanding and going through that journey, however small or large, doesn't activate your ability to work it until you have, if that makes sense. It kind of feels like very much when we do a spirit contract and you prick your finger and you stamp your finger on it in blood or sign your name, because you're using a piece of yourself. We just talked about witch's spit last episode, how the spit of a witch, yourself, is magical. It is changed because it comes from you, the active user, the witch. So let's get into some of these theories, because I think we've talked about some of the things that are kind of sticky, the way that people respond to it, the reactionary to the words, why the words carry that weight. But let's get into some of these actual theories. And the first one, of course, is, let's just get out of the way, the concept of generational ties. And I've even found weird reaction with this, because, you know, like, do I think that there is some unbroken lineage of true traditional, I use the words quoted, traditional witchcraft that has been going on since pre-Christ? No. I mean, not something that I think has been truly generationally passed down from family to family for thousands and thousands of years. I think that we may have discovered certain things that have inspired people. I do think that maybe families have been using specific folk magics or family traditions that absolutely could have been passed down. Do I think that people are now using it to sometimes bolster the claims they make, building a names for themselves and trying to
that's something that I certainly see. Yeah, for
yeah.
Sure.
The thing is like, that happens. People actually do have generational traditions that they're passing down through families. Some people really do have recipe books from their grandmas that have a mixture of how to bake cookies, how to, you know, how to make this dye, and how to remove thrush from your donkey. Like, some people really do have some of these things that are passed down through the families, and some people that just the way it exists. But again, when it comes down to elitism, some people like to go on the internet, some people like to publish books, and some people like to make claims that they have had generation after generation after generation of witches who have passed down a power and bloodline. And you can see that's the thing that makes people just go like, I mean, okay.
I think that with, it's complicated, right? Because
right.
So many people don't actually know
most
their own
don't.
Family by especially in a I
What
find
is
this
it?
very, very true with like WASP or and by WASP I don't necessarily mean rich, but I just mean like white Americans, white Protestant Americans. There's honestly, I find this oftentimes that we don't know a lot of our families outside of a nuclear family, right? The upholding of the nuclear family structure goes into all of these things that I was talking about earlier, Eurocentric, Western centric, I should say, even views of nobody else outside of the house that you know, right? So all of those things are wrapped up in there, which is why I brought them up. And that being said, so I find that a lot of people don't know their dead super well. And if they do, like you have witchy dead in your family. It's going to happen just by proxy of the fact that like magic was an integral part of life up until the decline of the quote unquote enlightenment. At least in the West, right? And in other places and in other cultures, it is still an integral part of life.
It may not always be called witch or witchcraft. It may have
Right.
been by many other names, but we're also talking about words we use modern now versus how they would have been different, say, like several centuries ago.
And even in some cases, which would still
Yeah,
be
it would
used
have.
as or is used as the term, is and was. So it's not just one or the other. We definitely have people who still work, which I'll get into in a minute, as people who are doctoring witchcraft or doctoring fairy illnesses or things like that. And this is a contemporary thing. This isn't like some ancient extant practice that doesn't exist anymore. Like this is still going on. We have healers and again people with magical lineages who do this, even if it's not even in America for the public to consume and to see. So yeah, it's a big world out there.
I know when we interviewed with Ozark Healing Traditions, we talked a lot about some of the Ozarkian traditions of passing down magics. We talked about the pouring water from jugs from one into the other. We talked about every single time I teach them a spell, I can no longer do it. We talked about some of these very small and localized folk traditions that exist that are passed down. Not always by blood or by family, but you are passing down this knowledge that this person can now do. And then once they teach it to the next person down, then they won't be able to. It's almost like this ever moving chain of magic through time.
And
It's
that's
not.
essentially what a lineage based tradition is too.
Yeah.
And there are other things that we could talk about too, like if you sit within certain mediumship sessions or even ancestral sessions of like divination and things like that, like this will come up where it's like, no, somebody made a pact to like it could have been forever ago, but I mean like somebody has made a pact to a spirit or somebody pissed something or someone off, right? And you are now the bearer of the brunt of this. Or even in times we'll have spirits that have traveled through generations, and it is your responsibility in some cases. If not, it'll pass to the next generation, right? But there are responsibilities of lines of these spirits who have followed family members and have been passed down. Sometimes, like in the case of Brandon, like you were talking about, like it'll be transferred. Not quite in the same way, right? Where we're talking about a magical tradition, but it'll be passed down where it's like, oh, you've inherited this spirit because you were the daughter of the son who has inherited this spirit. So it'll like cross from male to female. Sometimes it'll be through what we would call non-binary. There are many other words that are used that are wrapped up in culturally bound stuff. So like genderqueer people of many different kinds and names. Sometimes it'll be passed down matrilineally, sometimes patrilineally. Sometimes it's passed through marriage. So all of these things can be all things can be permissible in this, and I think that it's a wide weird world out there, and yeah, and
Yeah.
sometimes you have no such thing, and you don't have the burden of that, and
Yeah.
that's cool too.
That is cool. I agree, Austin.
Yes.
Speaking of weird things out there, this one's one of my actual this one was something that was introduced to me much later on in my journey of witchcraft, and I kind of want to get into it a little bit. The mythology of the Nephilim in witchcraft is so fascinating to me. It's not really one that I follow super closely. What about you? Is that something you follow very closely?
It floats in and out.
Yeah.
It's not like the it's there, but
It
it's not
exists.
like it's not. Yeah.
I think one of the first times that I was exposed to this was actually in a podcast with Christopher Penzack. And it was just like, wait, what? And it's very interesting. So there's this understanding, there's this belief system in certain traditions of witchcraft where they work with and venerate this mythology of the Nephilim, the story of it's the pre-Noah's Ark story where the angels came down and mated with mankind, creating the Nephilim. They taught the art of fire, medicine, arts, and magic, and the descendants are believed to be those still carrying that very knowledge. And so I've seen the way in which this has somewhat been twisted into this concept of, again, as you described, more of a blood quantum or a blood percentage. How directly are you actually related? Oh, you're not related to the Nephilim, so you actually can't do this magic, but I am, so I can. I've seen suggestions of this sort of disparagements around it. But at the same time, when you actually look at some of this mythology and the way, at least the way I was understanding Christopher Penzack explain it, is not so much, like as you said, a DNA sort of thing, but more so this concept of if you find yourself magically inclined, if you find yourself the person who is drawn to witchcraft, who finds a home here, who finds a special place spiritually here, it is of that mythological belief that that is because that knowledge has been passed down and you are a carrier of it. Not so much necessarily, oh, you have special DNA blood that we can test that literally has angel blood in it. More so a figurative, a metaphorical understanding that we are still carrying that knowledge down and we are looking to explore and expand upon it. I believe Crossgrove Books just came out with a book called The Grimoire of the Nephilim, which goes, I believe, somewhat deeper into, I don't know, I haven't read that one yet. I just saw that it came out. It goes into some of the Nephilim lore and working with those spirits on a literal conjuring level with their seals, with their virtues. It was really, really fascinating, and I think I want to get it.
I'm always on the fence with any of the Nephilim stuff just because I haven't read every single Book of Enoch, and most of this is coming from a certain passage within Enoch, and I think also in Genesis. And all of these things, like it's a very short passage about the sons of God mating with the daughters of man. Or as it says, like they came, the sons of God came into the daughters of man, I believe, if I don't have it right, sorry. And from them, basically, like this is where the angelic Nephilim thing goes. But honestly, like the text doesn't actually make it incredibly clear what it's talking about, which the Apocrypha. Which has been taken out, obviously, at the Council of Nicaea, so it is not a part of the Bible, is really what the reference point for like Nephilim is going on. But really, the Book of Enoch is many books.
Yeah.
There's several Enoch books, right? And the thing, the complicated part about it is that it doesn't spend very much time going over these this mythology. So whatever is kind of espoused afterwards is really an inference, which I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, I think many practices have been built on less.
But I think that I'm always a little skeptical about Which I mean, I'll also say, like, again, I haven't sat here and read every single book of
It's not
Enoch,
your
so
bag.
which is why I don't sit here and talk about it. But I mean, like, I'm always very skeptical. I'm like, well, have you read that? Have you actually read the parts that it's talking about? Have you read the entirety of the text? So I'm always like, I don't know, always a little
It's not for
deterred.
you.
It's not that it's not for me, it's just I haven't found the time. A little preoccupied in my day-to-day. So
You've got things going on. Okay, so here's one that I thought was really interesting. And this goes back to, again, some of those Appalachian and Ozarkian traditions, which I think also come from beliefs that have traveled across the Atlantic as well and grown and been fostered. But there's a couple of things that I, beliefs and traditions that involve people being born a specific way that makes them more magically inclined, or I hate this whole like chosen one mythology, but I mean, like, we can't just say that it doesn't exist because we don't like it. But you know, there's the concept of being born with the sight because you're born with the caul over your head. There's also the aspect of being the seventh son of a seventh son, and that doesn't just come from here in America. I believe that comes from overseas as well, over in Europe.
All the majority of the Appalachian stuff comes from Europe, because of the Celtic descendants and twins too, as well, which is all of these things like we're talking about is not inherent to European mythology. It's or a European belief or superstition. I'm not using that term derogatorily. The idea that there is a predisposition based on an omen for something, right? The call being a rare thing in the first place, but this amphibious thing, this other thing, it does not walk in water, it does not walk, it doesn't breathe in water, it doesn't breathe in land, where it does breathe in water and land, right? Water being the place where spirits are, the mirror to the other, right?
There's also
Sun.
being, wasn't there one that I think Corey Thomas Hutchinson told being born on Christmas, was it Christmas Eve or was it like December 10th? I can't remember. It was it November? We were talking about all the different holidays during the holiday time period historically, and there were a certain couple nights during that time period where it was said to be that if you were born on this night, you would grow to be a witch or a vampire. I think that was another one.
I'm not entirely sure of the date itself, but yeah, and we can talk certainly about some days that I can get into here. I wanted to talk about the Valarka, and the Valarka, excuse me, if I'm not pronouncing this in Serbian correctly. And this goes into some of the feast days that we were talking about, or holidays that happen the nights before. So Valarka are fairy seeresses. There's a really interesting documentary. I can't remember what it's called. I think it's My Sisters Climb Up the Pear Tree, or the Fairy Tree, something like that. You can find it on YouTube. It's a pretty short documentary, but it is following this woman. Her name is Sojmanka Ivanka. And again, I apologize if my Serbian, I believe, is not very good there. But this woman who is a folk healer, and she is pacted with these fairies and is wrapped up in this familial lineage, as in she considers them her sisters, or she calls them her sisters. So there is again this predisposition to being sworn in to some sort of fairy lineage, even one that is a familial family or fairy lineage, right? And on these feast days, within the Orthodox calendar, she will. A lot of people come to see her to take off certain curses, to do these certain cures, and so on and so forth. And she'll go into a trance state where she is being communicating with the fairies or even being taken by the fairies, and then she'll come back and she'll have these messages for people. And the way that she even talks about it is that if she doesn't deliver these messages for people, her sisters can punish her through a myriad of different ways, right? But a lot of the things that she uses are charms. And sometimes, like this, the melting lead, which I think we also talked about with Corey, that is more of a, well, both are divinatory, right? So the idea that you take like a piece of lead and you melt it down, lead will melt on the stove, and you pour it over cold water, on top of somebody's head. It's not falling onto their head, but it's like falling into the water above them. And the shapes that, can be used as charms to ward off this these influences. So I find her I find that the lineage that she is or part of very interesting and very fascinating. But this is she's not the only case. As I said, there are a lot of people who are a part of these traditions. And
I've never heard of that one before. What, where area did you say that was from?
it'll be in like the Balkan area, I believe.
Okay. That's fascinating. I don't think I have the capabilities to walk around in my apartment melting lead for charms, but maybe wax. I've seen that done for divination as well.
Within more Protestant notions, as or you'll see in America, I mean, the lead thing is still common. You can melt lead on the stove.
Oh.
It just is, do you want to?
Yes, there's that.
But some people will use the baptism candle, and they'll pour the baptism candle over water. I've done that before with
Oh.
my baptism candles,
Yeah. Talk
because you're
about your
supposed to save them.
apotropaic magic.
Yeah, absolutely. So you take the baptism candle that was lit at the person's baptism, which I mean, they sell these things at you can get them at church supply stores. They're very these long taper candles with, crosses painted on them and things like that. They're very pretty. But if your church doesn't use those, I don't know what to tell you. I come from a Lutheran background. And you save them, of course, because they're sentimental, but you can also use them for magical means. But the lead one, I think, is the most common. I think Corey talks about that one in his book as well.
Another way in which I have seen the term witch blood be used, and this is a one I think that might have been bringing up recently. There is and we'll talk about there's a book that's coming out later that uses that word in its title, and I'm going to actually read the definition of it before we go into that. I want to go into this concept of initiatory transformation, because I think one of the things that gets, again, really misunderstood and talked about when it comes to blood is this idea of quantum, or like something on the DNA that magically makes you more of the chosen one than someone else. That's not really the case when it comes to transformation and initiatory transformation. There's this idea that a form of initiation ignites this power within, opens gateways, opens doors. There's the idea of, and this is, and I'm just gonna perf I'll just be perfectly honest. I'm gonna be very, very limited with some of the information I'm about to give, but like a personal dedication with the form of a blood oath, that in itself is an activation, a quickening of the blood within, in my opinion. That is a contract made with blood. That's a witch's blood that you are then using your own in a contract. I'm not going to say whether or not I have or haven't done it, but I think that that's not an uncommon thing to be done in the world of witchcraft. And I do think that that is a transformative act. Signing your name in blood in a spirit contract is another historical thing that is done that I think magically transforms and creates a very specific type of bond. And then, of course, there's the personal transubstantiation of the body when working with spirits. So, this is my opinion, of course. The concept of working a craft or a magic when you are making contracts and bonds with spirits, I think that you are activating your body, making it magical in itself. I think the things that we use, like our spit, our blood, our fingernails, our scratches, our voice, our tongue, our ire, our emotions, our feelings. These are all magical things because we are embodying our magic. I think that's something that gets forgotten a lot when coming into this discussion, especially when it comes to initiatory transformation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the entire point of initiatory lineages, at least within to some sort of like witchcraft, oftentimes is either to, it is about receiving some sort of license. And from that license also, oftentimes in many of the European witchcraft stuff and even in some other conceptions of witchcraft, it is part of pacting or trading the human with the other, and therefore by this power becoming something else and not wholly. And this is part of like what separates, at least in my opinion and some others, this is what separates the magician from the sorcerer, from the witch, and so on and so forth, from the theurgist and blah blah blah, is that the witch has something not human. And this happens in other traditions too, like this isn't solely inherently a witchcraft thing, but that is often the times that I see that the big distinction of witchcraft is like you take something else out and put something in there that is not human anymore, and so therefore by this proxy, by this change, it changes the blood, it changes the spit, it changes the, you know, all of these things, and has the ability to become magical then, to make these witches' spits and things like that.
No, I totally agree. I'm gonna go ahead and read the description of this new book that's come out by Cross Crow called Awakening the Witch Blood. It's by Nathan King. I thought the way in which the description made me feel as though I perfectly understood what they were saying, and also the way in which I think some people might take it and twist it, depending on other topics we've discussed. So I'm going to read you this description real quick. Witches are not just users of magic. We are a physical embodiment, reflection, and power of the source. Coursing through our veins is a potent magical elixir called the witch blood, our personal source of power that creates the spark igniting our spells and rituals. Nathan King has created an impressive guidebook combining the mythology and folklore with operative rituals designed to enliven and quicken the metaphorical witch blood that courses through our veins. When I read that, I immediately felt this understanding, a very clear understanding, that this was a personal choice one were to take if they wanted to follow a very specific tradition or path or mindset surrounding witchcraft that would be about embodying the magic and feeling it through our veins, through our nerves, really kind of getting into a physical act of being and owning the title of the witch. That's what I got. I didn't get anything weird or nefarious whatsoever. I thought it was a beautiful description. And personally, because I deeply believe in the concept of embodying my craft and in the aspect of a whether that's a lineage-based tradition or a personal, like, hey, I went out in the woods and I did a very specific spirit initiation that I won't get into detail that involved what I believed was a quickening of my own instincts, the things that have changed the magic within me, that have granted me access, granted me ingress, opened doors to magics I didn't know or understand. That's my personal experience. And so I probably am definitely going to want to read this book just because, and I'm not, and we, just so people know, we have no ties whatsoever. No one asked us to read this definition. I just saw this and read it and wanted to bring it up because I felt like it spoke to my perspective on this a lot more, and one in which I think people are too quick to dismiss without participating in the discussion.
I wanted to read some of the Chumbly's Opuscula, which is his...
And you sent me this.
Yeah, his explanation for Azawisha, or are like these essays
Yeah.
on what he's talking about within Azawisha, or giving like background context. They're edited by Schulke. The majority of them, I think, were made in 2003, I believe, or at least that's when the book was published. So Chumbly says in his first essay, "Magic is not for everybody," or "Magic is not for everybody or everyone," something like that. "It is not for all, admittedly, in a theoretical sense. Magic could be used by everyone, and some might argue that all people use it, if only in an unconscious manner. This is no more than theoretical speculation aimed at a rosy picture of the world in which everyone is equal. The plain truth is that magic is practiced only by a few, even amongst occultists. Such assertions might well lead to the conclusion that I am willing to advocate to a form of spiritual elitism, and perhaps this is so. It is not so much that I am advocating it, but merely stating the facts which so many modern quote-unquote occultists attempt to ignore or whitewash over their New Age egalitarian morals. Beyond the artificial hierarchical structures of temporal society and the spiritual hierarchies of many occult factions, there is a small body of true initiates, not necessarily the secret chiefs or hidden masters, quote unquote, to both of those, but people who have become the magic which they practice. It is not for me to say whether or not such quote unquote true initiates are members of some hidden sodality, but it is perhaps a useful part of magic practice for us to believe as if they were, for such a belief gives us aggregate cohesion between the adepts of every path, and so in turn it may lead us to a more convergent source of all magic." And so he continues on for a while longer, talking about essentially his egalitarian idea of magic, and even says equates equality of the magical individual. How does that make you feel, Marshall?
You know, it's funny you said that. And the first thing that I thought of was, I remember I even said this. I said, like, anyone can do magic, but not everyone is a witch. So, like, not everyone is cut out to be a witch. I don't think that this path is for everyone, the same way I personally don't think that being a hairstylist is for everyone. I think we all have the ability to pick up a pair of shears and cut some hair, but not everyone is going to have the desire, the will, the want, the talent. Not everyone is going to have the innate ability and desire to carry it through all the way to the end. I think that's the way it is with a lot of things. And I think that's the same way it is with witchcraft. I also think that when we're talking about this specific type of witchcraft, we're not always including someone who might do a completely different other form of magical practice. There are so many around the world, and I would never say that if you're not doing it this way, it's not real. I think that's not what's happening here. But I think that some people will hear that and infer, or like to decide that that's what it's trying to say,
Yeah, I think Chumbly's
or
an
what I
interesting.
try to say.
Yeah, for sure. I think Chumbly's an interesting character in that way. I
Yes.
mean, he's a little. I won't get too far into my opinions on Chumbly. But
He's a
yeah, I
memorable
think
man.
he is memorable for sure. As are his contemporaries. Great works. But that being said, yeah, I think that magic is an innate part of culture. I will disagree that with him about the fact that not everybody is using it. I think his place, I think what he's really talking about, I think his wording could have been better for witchcraft. I'm sure he would argue if he were around, he would be like, "No, I meant magic." But I actually disagree with him that magic is not for everybody. I do think magic is for everybody because magic is an inherent part of culture, and everybody has culture. Everybody has a cultural structure, belief system. It's literally how we operate in our day-to-day lives. Culture is a set of practices that we have embodied as a group of people, which is why it's variant all around the world. And also when you get into like fragmenting groups of people into even smaller subgroups and so on and so forth. Magic is innate. Magic is cultural, as I said, because it's also wrapped up in religion. And even if you don't think that you have, even in like a idealized, secularized way of like America is a good example. Like we think that we're very big above that and things like that. But superstition, and I again, I'm not using that in a derogatory sense, is something that is very wrapped up in the way that we do things. And therefore, through this superstition, again, superstition being a supposed belief, a superimposed belief on like a way that a thing should be done, mm-hmm. not superstition as in you're a country bumpkin who doesn't know anything. I don't, that's how I mean. Mm-hmm. For those who haven't heard me go on that rant before. Yeah, it's important. We
well,
have
superstitions
it.
Are part of the cultural zeitgeist. And I think it's interesting. I never hear that word and think of something in a negative connotation. To this day, every single time I could drive by a graveyard, I still hold my breath, because growing mm-hmm. up, my grandpa instilled this belief in me that you're going to breathe in the evil spirits. I remember, you know, some of these are so cultural, they have nothing to do with spirituality whatsoever. You drive by a bug car and then you punch someone in the arm and say slug bug. Like some of these things are just, otherwise you're gonna get bad luck. If you say something at the same time as your friend, you say jinx, you owe me a Coke. Like these are things that are so culturally innate within us, and we don't necessarily even think of them as superstition or magic. They're just part of the zeitgeist. But when it comes to my own personal ideas, because we're kind of wrapping up near the end here, and I just want to share, like, I think I actually voiced what my personal idea is the most. I do believe in the transubstantiation of my own body in the process of combining with spirit, working with spirit, embodying the term the witch. I do think that that makes my blood magic. It makes my words magic. It makes my spit magic. It makes my thoughts magic. That's my personal belief. That doesn't mean that I think that everyone else who doesn't follow my personal belief isn't magical. That's a you thing, not a me thing. I like to do the me things. And sometimes I like to do me things a lot. I also believe very much in the concept of everyone can do magic, but not everyone will be a witch. That's okay. Not everyone should be a witch. Not everyone should be a hairstylist. Believe me, I've had plenty of apprentices.
Real. It also oftentimes, like, again, going back to the fairy Ceres that I was talking about, sorry,
yeah,
Ivanka, Sojmanka Ivanka, it oftentimes brings up the question of, as to why, because again, like I talked about, like, she is willing to do these things, but there is also a sense of like pertinency, like she has to, it's imperative that she must. Again, if she doesn't relay certain messages to her clients for healing, or sometimes not even for healing, but like the messages that these fairies that she is not betrothed, but in family with, they will punish her. And again, this isn't a story. This isn't some extant old school practice. I mean, it's a video documentary of her like being taken off in a trance state by a fairy. Like it, I encourage everybody to go watch it. Just look up Balkan Fairy Cirrus, and you'll kind of be able to find it, or Balkan Fairy Doctor. But yeah, again, this idea that not everybody wants to take on these jobs. We, of course, in America, and like people who are occultists, like we have this sort of like, I want to be this thing, and that's, you know, fair and fine and whatever. But in many cases, a lot of people would be like, I don't want that. I do not want this. A lot of the times, the initiatory practices for many of these, not only fairy seriouses, but a lot of doctors, medicine workers, witches, and so on and so forth, in many other cultures, will have been brought upon by early childhood sicknesses, like very, very intense sicknesses or near-death experiences, familial deaths, traumatic experiences, and so on and so forth. So a lot of these things are wrapped up in I wish that wouldn't have happened, you know? But again, here we are.
A lot of queer people too. I find that queer people find their way into more queer, and I say queer is not as in gay, obviously, but more in between places of spirituality. For whatever reason, that goes back to our old episode on how witchcraft is totally queer from the Pride episode. You've been listening to Southern Bramble, a podcast of Crooked Ways. I'm Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at Witch of Southern Light. Please buy my book, Cunning Words, Grimoire of Tales and Magic, on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. If you're in a cult shop and would like to carry my book, please, please do. It is wholesale at Ingram Spark Catalog as well. I have a new book coming out in October, October 1st. The Red Mother also will be on Amazon, and hopefully soon after that, Ingram Spark.
And I'm Austin Bain X Bramble on Instagram. You can shop all my womanly wares at BaineXBramble.com, where I will also be, I have lectures, perfumes. I'll be having a perfume sale coming up for May's Eve. So be sure to look out for that. I also have my most recent Venus and Pisces works that have came out surrounding the emotive element of water, including three water spirits that I have worked with for the past year and a half. So check that out if you want, or don't. I don't care.
Southern Bramble is a Patreon-supported show, and at this point, we'd like to thank our Tier 3 supporters by name. Earl, Tyrone, Nico, Kali, or Callie, or both of you, either or. Johnny, Jamesa, Jennifer, the Witch of Patapsco Forest, John R. Dean, Giles, Jennifer, Shauna, The Modern Babylon, V, Lisa, Ariella, Keith, Addity, Tracy, Timothy, Witch Rafa, The Lady Ghosts, and of course, Key Archibald. Thank you so much. You truly make this show possible.